I am David Cortez, the Richard Armstrong Professor and Chair of the Department of Biochemistry at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Fred Gingrich, the Tadashi Inagami Chair in Biochemistry. Fred has been a professor at Vanderbilt for over 45 years. He's trained hundreds of scientists, authored over 700 manuscripts, and those publications have been cited well over 100,000 times. We'll be speaking about Dr. Gingrich's service to the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, specifically about his roles as an editor at the Journal of Biological Chemistry, also known as JBC. So JBC was established in 1905, and it publishes a broad cross-section of biochemical research and has published many of the most cited articles of all time and remains a critical publishing outlet for biochemists throughout the world. Fred, why don't we just start by you introducing yourself?
Hi, I'm Fred Gingrich from the Department of Biochemistry. Dave gave you a little bit of insight about me, and I'll be glad to answer his questions.
Okay. Tell us about your research focus.
My research focus is on the enzymes that are involved in the metabolism of steroids and drugs and other chemical carcinogens. We're involved in the enzymology as well as the biochemistry per se of some of the metabolism.
Mm-hmm. And during your career doing that type of research here at Vanderbilt, what have been some of your noteworthy discoveries?
Well, we did some rather, I'd call it pioneering work on the cytochrome P450 enzymes, first in the rat model, and then particularly with the humans. Today, well, about 90% of the drug metabolism is done by cytochrome P450 enzymes, specifically about five of them, and four of those five were first purified in my laboratory. So I think this has actually helped contribute to how people actually discover and develop drugs today.
Great. So let's turn our attention to JBC. So tell us a little bit about what you've done and what positions you've held at JBC.
Well, as I recall, I started on the editorial board in 1985. I went on, I was into my fourth term, and after 18 years, I was asked to be one of the associate editors. That was in 2006. And twice I filled in as the interim editor-in-chief.
And so tell us a little bit about what it means to be an editor, an associate editor, editor-in-chief. What kind of activities did you do all the time?
Well, it varies, Dave. As an associate editor, you're sort of overseeing other people being the editorial, being on the editorial board. Well, you're also involved in selecting the people on the editorial board, and then you're involved in looking at their reviews and making the final decision about a manuscript as well. So it's a little different. And then also as editor-in-chief, you also have to assume other duties. You have to, you know, keep the journal running and also pick the associate editors.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, what has been the impact of JBC and its importance to our community of scientists?
Many of the really seminal articles have been published in the JBC over the years. Many of the Nobel laureates actually got their prizes based on papers in the JBC. Techniques that people use all the time, such as the Lowry assay, for instance, came out of JBC. Many techniques about gel electrophoresis, et cetera.
And then more generally, can you explain why scientific peer review is important?
Oh, it's really important, and I can't really overemphasize this. What we have to do, we have to trust each other, and other people have to trust scientists too. So you see this every day when people or your students and postdocs are trying to do experiments. They look in the literature and or trust those results in order to reproduce them and extend them and go on and use that kind of work for other things. It's also very important in other areas of life as well. We have to be trusted by clinicians, people who develop drugs, and also people in the legal business, too. How do you really trust something in terms of patent protection, et cetera? So peer review is really, really important.
And how many articles do you think you've handled at the JBC to go through the peer review process in your time?
It's a good question. Certainly thousands. I know one year when I was, I did 60 one year on the editorial board. And then one year when I was an associate editor, I handled 600 papers. So, you know, if you consider the number of years I've been doing this, clearly into the thousands, perhaps more than 10,000.
That is just an amazing number, Fred. A lot of service. So why did you feel it was so important for you to give so much of your effort to doing this?
It's a matter of being a complete biochemist, let's put it that way. When you become a biochemist, you're here to teach other people, to mentor other people, and also participate in the whole community. And this is really important that in a way you give back or give forward, you can even say it. You're part of a big community and you're trying to help the science grow, not just, you know, in terms of what you do in your own laboratory, but how you actually help the community and you help the science thrive. And you really have to be part of the whole community because, well, it's good for you too in terms of growing and learning as a scientist.
And so over these years doing this work, how have things changed? How has the JBC changed? How has scientific publishing changed over the years?
It's really changed a lot. If you go back to the JBC in the early days, we got manuscripts to review by mail. I think the first day I was on the editorial board, three of them arrived on my desk from three different associate editors to review. They used to come in these green and white envelopes, and so you knew that they were coming when you saw them on your desk. So we don't do that anymore. So that's changed. For a while, I think reports were being faxed in, if anybody remembers what a fax machine is. And manuscripts would be submitted on CD drives or CD disk and handled in that way. And in fact, for a while, we were actually getting the JBC on CD disks. They'd come every week along with the print copy. We don't publish a print copy anymore. We don't have CD discs going out every week anymore. So everything's totally electronic. And JVC was really one of the leaders in this whole field in terms of pushing electronic publishing then. So that's all changed. Another thing that's changed because of the electronic age is that now we have people reviewing, not only people from all over the world submitting manuscripts, but we have people from all over the world on our editorial board. We have people all over the world, even as associate editors, and it all works very well in that regard. So that's changed. So we've seen a lot of changes. On another front, though, there's actually a lot more competition now for publishing papers, too, than it seems like there used to be. So there have been many changes.
Preprint servers like BioArchive. Do you have any thoughts on that topic?
Frankly, I'm not that keen on it myself. And I was going to say, for a number of reasons. One thing, this isn't peer-reviewed. Okay. And, you know, sometimes you'll see things quoted, but they're on BioArchive. So how do you know that you really trust them? I've seen things in MedArchive, actually, in a legal case I was consulting on, people were quoting MedArchive. Well, and basically, you know, you get into the problem, just like I mentioned earlier with the lay press, all kinds of things you can find and quote and, you know, try to get the judge to believe it or get the public to believe it. So I'm not a big fan of that. I guess the other thing I've always been concerned about is that if you put something out like that, you can get scooped. And, you know, if somebody repeats your work and sends it into a real journal, What are you going to do, cry about it? So I don't know. I mean, I think it's good for people to get input but on their manuscripts, but you can do that with your colleagues.
Do you have any thoughts on how publishing or the JVC might change in the next 10, 15 years?
I'm not sure. Everything, we're getting more and more electronic, but I can't imagine how much exactly what that's going to mean. I don't really know. We're going through a big metamorphosis of this right now, still with the open access, and so things are changing. I hope we'll still have a basic peer review system. You know, journals, the whole concept of journals, I think it started, journals, scientific journals started in something like 1665, and so they look very different than they did. I don't know when they started peer reviewing these as we know now, certainly well over 100 years ago, and so things have changed. And they'll continue to change, but I hope the basic elements will be there. I don't want to see our science turn into a glorified blog site someday. I think, certainly, for the rest of my career, I think we'll have the same basic systems.
So one of the things you said is how important peer review is, and that as an associate editor or deputy editor, you had to select reviewers. I wonder what advice you give to reviewers, or how do you mentor young new scientists to be good reviewers? What do you hope to have that system that makes sure it's done well?
You have to take it seriously, and basically, I think one of the really important things about being an editor is to be fair and to treat papers uniformly. So I think it'd be fair and put yourself into the author's shoes. So you don't just say, well, I think it'd be nice if you'd make another knockout mouse and revise your paper. Well, that, you know, I think that's one of the things I like about society-based journals, because the editors are practicing scientists. We're not professional editors. We have jobs, we have labs, and I think we can appreciate what's involved in terms of doing work and trying to be reasonable with authors. So I think one of the main things is to, just be fair, and also, just look at this also. Is there enough information here to reproduce this? Because I think that's what, certainly drives graduate students nuts, drives me nuts when you see a paper and you can't figure out what the details really are, and it's so hard to repeat.
I agree. So what was the most rewarding thing that you've experienced as being an editor or deputy editor? What did you find?
A couple of things. I think I really liked working with the staff, and I really, one of the things I really enjoyed was developing a relationship with our former editor, Herb Tabor. He was editor-in-chief for nearly 40 years. He lived to be 101 or 102, and he was still sharp as a tack. He was still helping out with some things. And, just to see his devotion to the whole system was, it was just a pleasure to work with him. Very humble man, very fair, very dedicated. And the staff have been very good, too. I've worked with some great people, and I've got to know the other associate editors, a number of people over the years, and developed friendships with those. But I think beyond that, just being sort of a cog in this big wheel of science and actually play some part in terms of keeping the whole system going and moving forward, I think, at the end of the day.
Well, I just butt in and say thank you for being that cog in that wheel. We certainly need it and appreciate it. What about challenges? What has really been difficult as this?
A couple of things. You have to say no, or you have to decline papers, and some people don't take that too well, and so you have to deal with that. It's been difficult. We've had a couple of issues when we basically had to retract papers, and people didn't like that, so that can get kind of nasty. I think one of the things, though, you do have a constant grind. You never really get away from it. As at least an associate editor or deputy editor or editor-in-chief, there's a constant grind. You know, the papers keep coming in, even on the weekends, and holidays. You know, it's the 4th of July doesn't mean anything to people in Malaysia or Japan, of course. And so you never get it, and even on vacation, you can't get away from it. So it's a constant grind. It seems like, I mean, every morning the first thing I do is look for new papers that came in, and so you kind of have to do that. So you have to be prepared to deal with that. It's almost like raising cattle or something. They have to be fed every day.
Are there any especially memorable and noteworthy papers that you oversaw?
I remember one of the really good ones. You know, very seldom, as you probably appreciate, Dave, do you get a paper that doesn't require any revisions. That doesn't happen all that often. You know, I've had a couple like that. But I remember one, it was from Aziz Sanjar from the University of North Carolina. Aziz Sanjar, he's a really good guy. And he sent a paper in, and I sent it out, and both of the reviewers, they really couldn't find anything wrong with it. They said it was a great paper, and so I wrote a letter back. I said, Aziz, nobody can find anything wrong with your paper. Now, can you, I guess it's ready to go. And so he actually looked at it carefully, and he actually found a couple things himself again. Aziz is great. You know, he has a Nobel Prize from about 2015 or so, I think, in DNA repair, and he's just, you know, really all science, and I remember that, and he's a great, he's actually an, even though he has a Nobel Prize, he's still an editorial board member, and he actually he wrote a reflection article for us. He's published over 100 papers in the JBC. He continues to publish in the JBC, and so that was one of the really good experiences. I remember one of the more, on the other hand, there was an interesting character. I don't know this person personally. He was, he's from another country. That's not bad. We've been publishing papers from all over the world. I think our first foreign paper was 3 years after the journal started. But anyway, this person sent a paper, and I can't remember exactly what it was. It was something, it really wasn't appropriate for the JBC. Something about comparing sequences and inferring something about function, but not really proving anything. So I declined that. And then a paper came back again, and sort of got assigned to me. This was as an associate editor, and it looked pretty familiar, and it's, oh yeah, I remember that. Well, what happened was this author had sort of transposed a bunch of the figures and tables and given it a new title and sent it back in, and I guess was hoping for the luck of the draw, that, so to speak, that somebody else would get it and accept it. Well, I looked it up, and basically, yeah, it was the same paper. So I told him no, and then also mentioned something about the previous paper. So I thought this would probably be the end of it. Well, this one kept going through multiple cycles. I had told the front office also to sort of flag this author in case this came back. So I think this went through something like 8 cycles of, him just transposing things and trying to get away with this. And I told, and in fact, after third or fourth, or maybe even the second, I told him, told him that really this was the end, and he kept trying it anyway. And so he finally quit. Yeah, this went on for about over a year or so. So those are some of the more interesting stories.
I guess persistence is a good trait, but at some point you have to be a realist as well. It
doesn't always work.
All right. So what are the kinds of advice or I'll put it this way, what kind of common mistakes do people make when they write up a paper and submit it? What advice would you give a young investigator about publishing their work?
One of the things, this may seem obvious, but I don't think people do it that often, is to read the instructions for authors. You would be amazed how few papers come in the proper form, and look at typical papers in the journal and see how they're laid out and how you set the references and all this kind of stuff. I think that's one thing. I think I mentioned before, put in enough details so that other people can repeat the work. Put yourself in the place of someone who's going to try to repeat this. There's really, one of the things that's changed over the years is we're not really pushed for space. There was a time, if you go back 30, 35 years, when we had print version, they were really trying to cut down on the size of articles. Nowadays, we had an experience with something called mini print, if you actually go way back. Basically, the methods were printed in smaller print, and they're hard to read. We have lots of room, and you can use supporting information sections to your advantage. And we don't actually now. There aren't really page charges. There's a charge per paper, and you can use up as much space as you want to because we don't print it on paper. So put the details in. Make sure that somebody can repeat it. The other thing is, write logically, and I'm going to say certainly for young people, it's a process, I tell people you can't write well if you don't read well. So read a lot of papers and sort of pay attention to how other people are writing things and try to put that in so you start to get the flow and everything. It's not easy learning how to write. I know certainly when I was a young man in high school and college, I just loved chemistry. Math was okay too, but I loved chemistry. I'd be happy working in the lab all the time. But then it turned, and I hated taking classes like English. It seems like a waste of time. So now I spend half my time writing things and correcting other people's writings. And my postdoctoral advisor, Judd Kuhn, was a real stickler about writing. I learned a lot from him.
So being in this career for a long time, you must have had your share of rejections.
Few.
Yeah. So we all do. Is there anything you could share about what to do when you submit that beautiful paper, you spent all this time on the research, put all the details in you could, and you get the rejection notice? What should the author do?
First of all, take a deep breath and don't do anything drastic. Again, as you said, this happens to everybody and eventually. Just don't do anything the first day. Well, read, but don't write, don't start drafting a nasty letter to the editor, and don't call the editor. First of all, I've figured out how not to take any of those calls, because people are usually mad, and also the other thing is, I don't really want to tell people anything, because first of all, if I'm going to go back to the reviewers on a revision or a rebuttal. I've got to have everything, you know, written down. And the other thing is, I don't want people saying, well, you said that you do such and such. Well, if everything's on paper, that's a good way to do it, because I'm not going to, I can't promise anybody I'll take their paper then. So don't call the people. So the other thing is, yeah, just take a deep breath. You'll wait a day or so, and then take a look hard, and, you know, maybe there were some things that are wrong with how you laid it out, or maybe you didn't explain things well. That's often the case. And I know certainly at JBC, we will take resubmissions. I mean, eventually there will be a point where, you know, I have to say, shots here, but this is the end of it. But, you know, if you think you have a reasonable case, you can make your case to the editor and try it again. But, you know, try to take your criticism constructively. The editorial board, the reviewers and the editors aren't mean people. They're in almost every case trying to help.
So, Fred, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us about your experience at JBC or publishing?
You know, I think one of the things I think that's still very important, I mentioned this already, but I really like to stress that society journals really have a place. And as I said, you'll find with pretty much all society-based journals, they're run by real practicing scientists. And when I say run, actually making the big decisions about how to do major things with the journal, not just every paper, but in terms of the direction of things are going. I've, you know, done a lot with ASBNB. In the past, I'd actually been an associate editor for journals with ASBET, the Pharmacology Society, and American Chemical Society, and even with AACR, the Cancer Society, too, as well. So, you know, I didn't spend as much time as long with all of those as I have here. But it's actually been a very rewarding part of my life. I think I really would have missed something. I know when I was asked to be an associate editor, I called up a couple of the other associate editors I knew and asked them how much time it would take and everything. But I think I really would have missed something if I hadn't done this. And so it turned out to be an important part of my career.
Thank you very much for your time today to talk about this. As an author in JBC, I thank you for the effort.
Yeah, I noticed that you just had a paper come in.
I just submitted one to JBC.
I can't review it.
I just submitted it. Absolutely.
Good for you.
Yes, my students look forward to those peer reviewers and the fair and quick response that the editors always give.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. One of the things we do try to do very hard are we have a average time now to a first decision of, I think, 17 days or so. That's, you know, I think that's important. There's no reason nowadays, we're not depending on the mail. And I think one of the things I probably should have mentioned before when you asked me how much things have changed, things are very international now. As I said, we'd had foreign authors forever, but nowadays, you know, even a lot of our editorial board and some of our associate editors are in other countries, too. We couldn't do that before because the mail would take a week to get there, and we don't have to worry about that. But we do try to be fast. I think that's, not too bad. I mean, we want to look at things seriously, but, we try to do that. People are waiting for their decisions. Sometimes it's important to get papers reviewed to get your grants in and stuff. Yeah, so I think we're going to keep trying to push that, and we're not going to get it down to 3 days or something like that, but I think 17 days is pretty good for getting a paper. Absolutely. I would echo that. As a reviewer, I always try to be as quick as possible. It's on my desk. I'd like to get it off my desk as well. And as an author, we all appreciate that speed. And JBC is, I think, probably the fastest journal that I know I've ever submitted to. So I appreciate that, too.
Well, thanks.
Well, thanks for your time.